podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Same Old Arsenal podcast. We are back. Post-game analysis show is back. Very exciting to have with me the usual crew. It is on my left, on my right, whatever way you look at it. We've got James Cookie. Hello, darling. How are you?
Hello, Amanda. I'm very well, thank you. Just before we start, I think we've got Albert waiting in the chat room so we can get another guest on.
Oh, I couldn't even see him.
This professional show.
Right. This rocket. Is so unprofessional. But what happened was he was below. I'm going to add Albert to the stream.
Yeah, I was there.
Albert, no, I couldn't see you because you were below. You know I'm no IT. Anyway, let's start again. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Same Old Arsenal podcast. I've got all of them with me tonight now. We've said hello to James. Now we're going to say hello to Suburban Gooner Chris. How are you?
Joy to the world, the Arsenal's back.
Right, he's well, that's good. Albert, I'm so sorry, darling, because on my stream yard I could only see the top level and then I didn't see you. Right, and there was me saying he's not normally late.
Nah, he's not normally late. But good. No, thanks for coming. It's good to be back.
Isn't it amazing?
My World Cup content is done. It's Arsenal now, so.
Well, I'm going to talk about my World Cup content later, not now, because now it's all about the Arsenal. And for everyone in the chat room, thank you so much for joining me on the days between Christmas and New Year. No one actually knows what day it is. We don't know what we're doing. All I know is it's a weekday and I've got to go back to work tomorrow, which I'm not happy about. I had no holiday left, but I've got to go back to work tomorrow. So I want to wish everybody in the chat room and all my little guys here, Merry Christmas, Happy Boxing Day, whatever day it is, you're all welcome to come and chat with us. Guys, when I ask the guys a question, please answer and I'll put them all up. Also, please, please, please press like and subscribe. You've got to press like if you're top of the league. Anyone in this chat room that is top of the league, you've got to press like straight away. I don't even know where to start, to be honest. So I don't know who was there last night. James, were you there?
I was indeed, yes.
Chris?
I was not. I was doing the Howard family derby. So sorry to go into a one minute monologue, but my entire family are from Stratford and on my dad's side. So I was around my brother's house, West Ham fan, with my nephew, West Ham fan, his father-in-law, proxy West Ham fan, my dad, who's from that area, doesn't really like football that much, but he still supports West Ham. And there was me, the lone Arsenal Ranger, having to sit there on my hands for the first half and then enjoying the second half. But we'll get to that.
And that's Chris finished. Albert, were you there last night, darling?
I wasn't. I was never going in the first place. But then there was a possibility that I could go. But then it was confirmed on Christmas Day that I'm not coming.
It's all right.
But
I have to thank
the guy for going to the games this season. But no, so I had the comfort watching the television. So it was good.
So it was only me and Cookie there last night, but you all watched it. That's good. Everyone in the chat room, who was there last night? Put your hands up. But you know what I want to start with? It's a really weird feeling yesterday. I don't know if you felt this, James, but I felt like the break was quite a while, but we have all watched loads of football. I suppose we've all watched the World Cup. We've all been so desperate to watch our players, and then Jesus gets injured. So it was a weird one last night, because when I turned up, also it's Boxing Night, I've had to leave my family. I just felt it was a real strange. I normally go to football and Boxing Day. I normally go at lunchtime and you're back home with your family in the evening. So, you know, it was a weird one. So just talk us through, James, the team, basically. Did you expect that team to start or not?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I've got to say, huge well done to the Arsenal fans that made it there last night, because going there with the train strikes and giving it like 8 p.m. on Boxing Day, I mean, what is that all about? It's absolutely mental. But that stadium was as packed as it would be for a North London derby last night. It was so, so packed. Raucous atmosphere, particularly in that second half. So, yeah, big well done to the Arsenal fans for that. In terms of the team, I think it was, you know, as strong as we possibly could have gone. I didn't really expect it to be that strong, to be honest, because there were question marks around the likes of Saliba, a couple of other players, but they all looked so fresh, so ready. I thought the players that didn't go to the World Cup, Ødegaard in particular, I thought he was scintillating last night, but I'm sure we'll get on to him.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, the performance was, I couldn't have asked for any better post-World Cup. I thought we were excellent.
Oh, it was incredible. It was really weird. About 10 minutes before kickoff, it was pretty empty. And I turned around to Cole and I went, this doesn't look good tonight. This looks really poor. We did have a lot of non-season ticket holders around us. I didn't recognise many people at all. And then honestly, with 1 minute to go, the whole ground looked like it filled. There wasn't really gaps and stuff like that. There was odd seats and stuff. But I think what's wonderful about this season is I think more people are putting tickets on Ticket Exchange. So because everyone's so desperate to go, you know that if you put a ticket on there even yesterday morning, people were desperate to go, so they would have been looking. So, all right. So for the boys at home, so let's start with Chris. I'm assuming you all watched it on Amazon Prime. I haven't seen any of the interviews. I've missed all of the Thierry and Arteta stuff because when I got home, we couldn't watch all that. So the team, as we all thought, I think that's what we roughly thought. Were you all positive? I forgot to ask you that because we haven't spoken, have we? So I wouldn't have known your pre-game. For a start, I went for 2-1. And I do have to say, Carl Stark was adamant it was going to be 3-1. So well done to you, Carl. Do you feel positive about last night, Chris?
No, but only because, so I feel positive with Arsenal at the moment because of the start to the season that we'd had, but because of the World Cup break, there was part of me that was like, I don't know, like I'd seen Man City and Liverpool not look great. I've seen a few teams, like we all had a big, big chuckle at Tottenham not performing. Mm-hmm. And I did wonder if there would be a hangover for us. And certainly, again, we won't go into the detail of the first half and all of that sort of stuff and going behind. But I wondered if we'd just end up getting frustrating game, a low block team, difficult to break down. We all get a bit frustrated and start to have a wobble. But again, we'll probably talk about this. But as it panned out, even when we were behind, I was like, do you know what? This doesn't look like an Arsenal team that are panicking. But yeah, so I thought it would be difficult. I wasn't sure what Arsenal would show up because of the World Cup, but I was more than pleasantly surprised.
So, Albert, it was a strange first half. Can anyone hear me back? Because I can hear myself back. Or do I sound okay?
You're right to me. Fine.
Okay, fine. I'll carry on. It's a bit weird hearing myself. Albert, so we expected that first 11. None of us knew how anyone was going to, you know, come back from the World Cup. I didn't know. I went for 2-1, but I wasn't sure if we were going to have the same momentum. Was that a worry for you or not?
Not really for me. I know there was a lot of hoo-ha around that sort of before the World Cup break, but sort of going into this game, I was quite confident just because our record against West Ham is very, very good at the Emirates. And for them, their record is atrocious. Diabolical, actually, Amanda, to be honest. But yeah, they'd only scored. I think they'd only scored before yesterday three goals away from home this season. I mean, I know they were struggling to score goals, but that's quite bad. So I was quite confident, Amanda. Yes, London derby. Yes, we had the break from the World Cup. But I think, you know what it was? When there was the Man City Liverpool game in the Carabao Cup, that was a barnstormer. And you think we've had the break for the World Cup. So the actual game yesterday itself was in terms of standards, and it's not like a normal season, man. Obviously, you know, you had the World Cup, but I don't know, how can I put it? The players are they're not at the beginning of the season, they're a bit way through it, but it's not towards the end of the season. So they're kind of fine-tuned, really. So I think it shouldn't be probably a major surprise how the momentum of the game went, but that's how I kind of saw it, to be honest.
Okay, I'm really sorry, but I've just changed, so hopefully this is a bit better. Is there an echo? I think I've just set my microphone slightly different. I do apologise. So we get started, and to be honest, I wasn't... Well, looking back, it wasn't as bad as I thought, but I just felt the first half... I mean, obviously, you had the disallowed goal, which I thought... I called offside before I even hit it. I didn't even look at the linesman. I called offside. We started off fresh, didn't we, James? I would like to say just a bit about the atmosphere in the ground. I thought the first half was a little bit poor. The second half was incredible. And as always, you know, they go and score their penalty and we're clapping them back and we're up on our feet and we're doing everything that, you know, we've always been doing. But what puts me off, and I absolutely love the Ashburton Army, I think they're phenomenal. But I do not, and I hate it, and I always have hated drums in a ground. And I think it's changing our atmosphere. James, do you agree or not on that?
I know we spoke about this before. It's really hard to say. I think what they're doing can only be a good thing, to be honest, because we've not really had anything like that in the ground. I mean, there are elements of it that I think are a little bit strange. Like when you see them walking down Holloway Road, you know.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant.
I think the pyre and everything looks great, but you know, I don't quite get why they all cover up their faces and things like that.
No.
I'm not gonna go into that, but I find that a little bit bizarre. But I think in terms of the atmosphere they're generating and what they're doing kind of almost every game now, where they're bringing something out at the start. I mean, even yesterday, it was just those little red and white banners. I mean, it's such a nice touch. And, you know, see him clapping for the full 90 plus minutes. It is only a good thing. I'm not too fussed about the drums, to be honest. I mean, you can hear it in every single corner of the grounds. And I do get what you mean. It can interrupt some of the chants. But I thought in that second half, I mean, the entire crowd was just overwhelming in terms of getting the songs out there. I mean, the one for Arsene Wenger in particular was being bellowed out. The one thing I do think we need to get better is North London Forever at the start. I still think that's not quite right. Feels so rushed at the start of games, particularly yesterday where there was that kind of minute between the minutes applause and then the game starting. And then they just kind of played a song kind of halfway through. It just that didn't work yesterday for me. I think that needs fine tuning.
Do you know what? I think when we come out, or before we even come out, play it. But we had this minute silence, and about 50 seconds into the minute, they started playing it, and the players were still clapping on the pitch, and I felt bad for singing because we were still doing the minute silence. Yeah, they've got to sort that out. But anyway, I don't like the drum. I've said it on Instagram to them. I love them to pieces. I think they're absolutely phenomenal for what they're doing. I absolutely love North London Forever. I know there's a few people that don't. But the drum drives me mad because I do feel it's affecting the chants. I do. But anyway, let's move on. I'm just going to go. Let's go up to the penalty. What was your thoughts on the first half, James?
I thought we played pretty well. There's nothing that, you know, was standing out to me as being particularly poor. I just think the only criticism I would have is that we were being overly intricate, which, you know, Arsenal teams have really always been guilty of. But there were so many opportunities where we got into a good position and you're just thinking, put the ball on someone's foot to score or just take a shot. And we just weren't doing that. And I think we were just lacking that cutting edge in the final third. But we created so many opportunities and we got into so many dangerous areas that, like you were saying, Chris, this team wasn't worrying. There was nothing for me to be particularly worried about as a supporter. But obviously, we'll go into the goal in a second. But when you go 1-0 behind, it does get, you know, your old heart pounding a little bit. And that's why I think the atmosphere was affected, because we'd had so much of the ball. We hadn't put it in the net and we find ourselves a goal behind. But yeah, I'll leave it there.
And James, what about, and I'm going to move on to Chris in a second, but what about the bloody... Why weren't they shooting? I feel like I was back 3 years ago screaming, shoot, 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 every minute, because they were just trying to walk it into the goal. I don't know if they were nervous. I don't know. But it drove me mad, James. I was like, come on, Thomas, you shoot. Erdegaard, you shoot.
Yeah, it's like I was saying, we got into so many opportunities where we were maybe, you know, 10 yards away from the net and we're still trying to find that final ball to make sure, you know, it absolutely goes in the net. But when you look at the goals we scored in the second half, the opportunities that we created, I mean, they kind of came from well, really good play, first of all. But that Martinelli shot, I don't think he takes that shot in the first half. You know, because it was a tight angle. But when we're in those positions, we need to shoot more often, because the likes of Martinelli, Ødegaard, Xhaka, even Nketiah, they've all got the ability to score from those tight situations. So yeah, I think, you know, we learned to do it in the second half. I think, you know, maybe just a little bit of nerves, as you say, coming back into the Premier League. But our finishing yesterday, as it has been all season, was really, really good.
Okay, so Lynn Simpsons, welcome to the show, Lynn. Every week you're here and it's lovely to see you again. Lynn thinks, Chris, personally for me, that was a soft pen. What do you think?
It was a massively soft penalty. I often, I mean, I think most of us look at it and think, if that was the other way, how would we feel? And if that would have been given to us, I'd have probably have thought, that's a bit soft, got a bit fortunate there. Again, going back to what I was saying earlier, with my brother, West Ham fan, he was quite he's very partisan. Even he said, that's a very soft one. But going back to the Saka goal that was disallowed, even he said, do you know what? Offside is, it should be about, have you taken an unfair advantage? I'm not really sure how much an advantage that actually was for us. I mean, it was the tiniest of clips off of Saka's heel. So I think, I mean, by the letter of the law, that offside goal should have stood. Going back to the penalty, fast forwarding to that penalty on 27 minutes or 25 minutes, whenever it was. Yeah, it felt really, really super soft. And at half time, it just felt like the VAR was just tipping onto the right side of, sorry, the wrong side of unfortunate for us. Like, you had the Cresswell one where he's moved his hand up like that and it's hit his head. It's not a penalty, but he's moved his hand up as almost like a natural human reaction. I think if he moves his hands up a split second earlier, his hand's probably naturally going to go towards his face. And, you know, that might have even have hit his hand. But even if that, is that even a penalty? I don't know. But it just felt like, whilst the decisions were right in that first half, the penalty that wasn't given for us, the penalty that was given for them because there technically was contact and the Saka thing, it felt to me like it was all just kind of stuff that's like, you're kind of thinking, oh, yeah, but maybe, but it's probably right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and Albert, in the ground, as you know, we don't get a replay on the penalty. So I've literally WhatsApped my dad and gone on Twitter and said, was that a pen? I can't tell you the split. It was 50-50 on whether it was or wasn't. So we don't see it, right? So I'm sort of going, Cole doesn't think it is. I don't know, right? And we had that again with our penalty. Now, when I went on Twitter on our penalty, everyone said it wasn't. So I knew straight when they went, when he was still standing on the pitch, the referee, I said to Cole, this don't look good. He hasn't even gone to the screens yet. He hasn't been called to the screens. I said to Cole, I think this is, he's going to be going to the screen and it's going to be called, because people like Arseblog and Charles Watts and all that were saying never a penalty. And I was like, oh, that's a shame. So I was already okay with it because I'd already seen it wasn't. But for you, Albert, both of them, I thought it was a penalty. I've obviously come home and watched Match of the Day and I went, that's a penalty. We would have wanted that. If that was Jesus or Saka going through and he was slightly touched, when you're running at speed and you're touched, you're going to go, aren't you, Albert?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like you said it. If that was, if the shoe was in the other foot with the West Ham penalty, Arsenal, especially with Arsenal fans' history with referees in the Premier League, over covering a number of years, they'd have been absolutely furious that hadn't been given. They'd have said there's been conspiracies. We need to watch Ref Watch with Dermot Gallagher and see what he said. Amanda, all sorts would have happened. So at the time, and when it happened at real time, I wasn't sure, but I thought, you know, let me see the replay. When I saw the replay, that when you got the angle that you got for it to be conclusive, you're like, you know what? I can see what has been given as a penalty. As for the Arsenal one, that we didn't get, Michael Oliver was very, very unsure about that penalty. And you could see for the length of time that he took. So I was 100% sure. And obviously we saw the replay and it smacked him straight in the face. So that was obviously wasn't going to be given. Yeah. So yeah, listen, more so the West Ham one. If the shoe been the other foot and that wasn't given, oh my God, we'd still be talking about it now. But yeah, I can't disagree. I think it was a penalty. Yeah, he went down a bit late. But like you say, man, when you clipped,
at speed.
Sometimes you don't automatically go straight to the floor. If you're trying to keep your balance, that's what you're going to see what happened with Jarrod Bowen. But yeah, it was a penalty for me personally.
Okay, so Chris, you just brought up a point privately. Jesus, Liverpool, penalty.
Yeah, we had the same thing, didn't we? And again, was in the ground for that one. And you see the contact, and there is contact. And so you've got to say, that's a penalty, it's contact. Yeah. So we as Arsenal fans, I don't think, can say, well, the Jesus one was a penalty because there's contact. And then say, well, Jarrod Bowen, you've gone down too easily. Yeah, he has gone down easily, but maybe Jesus went down a little bit easier. So, hey, sometimes it's for us, sometimes it's against us.
So when he takes a penalty, it's right in front of me, literally right in front of me. It was a very good penalty. It really was. And then it's 1-0 to West Ham. And as Cookie, you know, we all got up, we all cheered for our players to get back. There was an urgency. There was like, come on, we can do this. It's only 1-0 against West Ham. We've got really another whole half to go. What was you feeling in the ground? Was you thinking, we're going to do this? I sort of said to Carl, Cookie, at that stage, I went, would you take 1-0? He said, no. I said, I would. Because I just, you know, I thought the World Cup, I thought the hangover, nothing was falling for us. They weren't shooting. They weren't playing badly. I can't say they were playing badly. West Ham parked a bus and we had to try and break them down. But was you thinking that we can still do this?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit worried pre-game, to be honest, because I know a lot of people were thinking this could be a whitewash, you know, 3-4, you know, maybe even 5-0. West Ham's position in the league obviously isn't great this season. They've not played particularly well this season, but they are a team that got to the latter stages of Europa League last year. And when I was looking at their kind of front four yesterday, you've got Berama in there, you've got Antonio leading the line, they were bringing the likes of Fornals off from the bench, they've got Bowen, who's an excellent player, and obviously they've got Paqueta and Declan Rice in midfield. So it's not exactly a team that's short of talent. Those are all good players that I've listed there. And I thought Bowen and Antonio in particular on the break were particularly dangerous. I mean, Bowen against our left-hand side, where we know either Tierney or Zinchenko wants to slot into midfield and basically vacates that left-hand, left-back spot when we're on the ball. I thought Bowen was having so much joy down there. And at 1-0 to them, my main worry is, you know, they've got a defence that's fairly solid, you know, Dawson can head the ball away for games on end. If we don't score fairly soon, then the worry is that we're going to commit so many men forward, and then they've got danger on the break in the likes of Antonio and Bowen.
Yeah.
And that's why I was a bit worried towards the end of that first half, because we had so many opportunities. We obviously had the penalty call, and the relief I felt when we got that penalty was overwhelming. But obviously we didn't get it. I went back to that crippling anxiety almost. But then as we've done many a time already this season, come out in the second half and got a goal so early on. What was it, 51st minute? And then we went 2-1 up about 5 minutes after that. So that is what I love about this team. The way we don't overreact, we don't try and force the issue. We are patient in our build-up, and we know we've got the quality to score. There hasn't been a Premier League game so far this season that we've not scored in. And, you know, I just don't see us, you know, not scoring at the minute. The players we've got and the strength of those players. I mean, Saka winning the ball off Declan Rice for one of the goals. Martinelli, fantastically strong as well. And Ketty has really bulked up as well. And Odegaard, you know, we'll talk about him in his own little segment. But my God, what a performance.
Yes, we're all going to wax lyrical about, well, my man of the match, and I'm assuming all of your man of the match. But what a joy it was. But just, Chris, let's just back up a little bit to, we've come out the second half, listen, 1-0 down, this is the Arsenal, we're top of the league, we're 5 points clear at that time, we can do this, can't we? We can get another goal. I did say, if we get one, we win this. But I was just hoping that we were going to start shooting. But I think what Arteta had said, or someone had said, was that there was no way they could play like that for 90 minutes. So they were going to be fatigued. And then once they were fatigued, we just took them apart, didn't we, Chris?
Yeah, I think on the shooting thing, I think this is an interesting one to probably debate, because that's just the way that we set up, the way that Arteta sets up, is a methodical team that you control ball, you control possession, and you basically look at the risk profile of the attempts that you have, and like the shot percentage sort of ratio. So we aren't going to be a team under Arteta that has these long range shots, that we're not have a go heroes. This is a team where Arteta, we've got to recalibrate ourselves as fans. And I think we have been doing in the last few years to think that Arteta sets his team up structurally so organized into a certain way of playing. He will literally be talking about certain zones on the pitch where if we get the ball in this opportunity with these bodies, that's when you take an opportunity. That's when you take your effort. And that's why I don't think we're going to see, you know, those, we don't see those Thomas Partey efforts too much. We don't see those shooting from the edge of the box, because actually it's about work positions, maneuver the opposition into certain positions, get in behind. I thought Kieran Tierney was quite good from that perspective. Mm. He got in behind at times. And that's how Arteta wants to play. He wants to manipulate the opposition so that it's creating space and creating a lower risk profile for shots that we take. So I'm not worried about when we don't take longer range shots. What I am worried about is if we don't control games. And we controlled this game from start to finish. I wasn't stressed. Well, I was frustrated, but I wasn't stressed at half time. Like I went to go and get a drink, had a little chat with the family members that weren't watching the game, and they're all sitting there pensively saying, how's everyone doing? Because it's all, you know, Arsenal versus West Ham family, blah, 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 blah. But I wasn't stressed because this Arsenal team didn't look stressed. Like in that first half, we didn't look like a team that was like, oh God, we're one behind here. Those players look like, it's fine. That I wrote this in my blog this morning. It almost felt like when I've watched Man City and Liverpool in the last few years, if they go behind, it's like, it's cool. We've got so much quality in attack that we will create chances and we will score goals. So we just need to be patient and make the most of our opportunities.
Chris, they could have taken one of the shots. I'm not saying completely shoot the whole game, but the first half, there was plenty of chances they could have. That's all I'm saying. But this is the point I was making. Welcome to the show, Melissa. I knew they would come out better the second half. There's no way Arteta wouldn't have told them to step it up. Also, I thought West Ham would struggle to keep that defence up for a full game, which is what I meant, Albert, by fatigued. You know, that is exactly it. And I think it did change. So we come out second half, Albert. I can't remember. Was it 50-something minutes we scored?
51, 52 minutes,
51,
yeah.
51, right.
Sorry, 53. Not to be a pedant.
53. That's absolutely
exactly
fine.
Exactly why you said it.
Only because I've got the numbers in front of me. Only because I've got the numbers in front of me, Albert. Sorry, mate.
So how I remember it, it was that Partey lost the ball in midfield. Mm. He won it back off Declan Rice. That was it. Who then passed it to Ødegaard, who we just even needs to just like go on about him for about 20 minutes. We found Saka somehow and bang, he scores. It was just an incredible, lovely goal to watch, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, it's because you know what, Martin Ødegaard, there was a couple of times in the first half where it predominantly him, he's got to pull the trigger more, man.
Yeah, seriously. I agree.
Stop trying to pass when you're in the have a shot.
That's what I'm saying to Chris. He can do one of the shots.
So yeah, he took a shot. It was awful. But he actually went down as an assist. But listen, we're not going to complain. But yeah, Saka, great first touch, by the way. Amanda, you make a good point because I don't think a lot of people forgot it, but Thomas Partey wins the ball back with Declan Rice. That was key. But yeah, Saka, great first touch. And beautiful finish. Listen, well, like I said, I think my three key words we started that second half was pressure, pressure, and more pressure. And that's what we did. In intensity started very well, like you said, you mentioned sort of the game as a whole. We you know what, there wasn't too much to pick holes in it apart from not putting the ball in the back of the net, but that changed within that sort of first 10 minutes of the second half. We beat Fabianski at the near post with Martinelli's goal as well, but listen, we'll take it, Manda, we'll take it. But that's the thing, but we're not panicking. There's a lot more resilience to this team goal contribution wise. I think Jesus, obviously, and Saka are in double figures in terms of goal contributions, even though he's out for a few months. Martinelli's not too far behind. So if one's not scoring, someone else is scoring. I was very pleased that second half. And Melissa mentioned it in the chat. West Ham weren't going to keep that up for the remainder of the game. And like I said, they've not been good this season at all. They're struggling to win football matches. But Arsenal, listen, this was a... what's the word I can use, Amanda?
For what, Albert?
Just in terms of the performance after such a long break, it was not a statement. Yeah, it was. We did. It was very good. I mean, like I said, in the first sort of the first 15 minutes, is like 71% possession, and then dropped off to about 67% for the whole entire game. So we was dominant, and like I said, there's not too many things to pick holes in the performance, to be honest.
Can I just jump in on one thing on the Martinelli goal and just get your thoughts on this, guys? Because we commit so many bodies into the box these days, this season particularly, I wonder if Fabianski had half an eye on what other... Is Martinelli going to cut this back to somebody? And that's why he doesn't actually look at his near post. So there's people that will probably be saying, Fabianski shouldn't be beating at his near post. But I just wonder, do we commit so many bodies forward that as a goalkeeper, you're watching it and you're thinking, he's going to cut this back because there's so many bodies here. So I'm half watching what else is going on. And so then when Martinelli drills it at his near post, he's only half watching. Am I maybe being a little bit too generous or a bit harsh on generous for Fabianski? I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think that he should not have let that in his near post. Mm. And I think you're being a little bit unfair on Martinelli because I think it was a very good shot. Cookie?
Yeah, likewise. I think you've got a really good point there, Chris, because it's also not typically somewhere you'd find us shooting from or any team shooting from. But like you say, Amanda, really good, hard, low finish. It's going to be difficult for the keeper either way.
Albert?
Yeah, not just to agree with what the guys are saying, really. Yeah, you as a keeper, if that was Ramsdale, would be furious if you let that in that type of goal. So, listen, as Arsenal fans, we are not complaining. So, yeah, that was pivotal to go 2-1 up so quickly.
Why don't we just go from back to front and just discuss the players? Because we want to talk about each player, don't we? We don't want to just talk about Odegaard and Saka, because I think there's other players that I'd like to talk about. Ramsdale didn't have much to do until the last few minutes, and he made an amazing save, didn't he, boys?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, what can you say about Ramsdale? I mean, apart from that save, I thought his distribution was very good last night. I thought he looked fresh, ready to go. Great save. Great character to have in the team. England's number one, obviously.
I was just thinking about his character, James. I love his character. I do love a little bit of that shithousery, and I think he's got that. Okay, let's talk about Chris. Tierney, and then obviously Zinchenko came on, which is great to see that he's back fit.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good. I'm really interested to see how that dynamic's going to play out in the next few games. I think Cookie and I are on the Kieran Tierney love train because we do both appreciate him quite a lot. James, I hope you don't mind me talking on behalf of
the... No, mate, I will never, ever, to the day I'm in the ground, get off the Kieran Tierney love train.
But we're on that bandwagon. So as the designated representative for the Kieran Tierney love train, I'm just going to speak on behalf of both of us now. But so I'm pleased that he got some minutes because pre-World Cup, a little bit concerned playing when we were playing Tomiyasu at left back. In games where, you know, we all talked about the Liverpool game where it was like, do you know what? I can understand tactically, da-da-da-da-da. But then there was other games where Arteta was playing Tomiyasu and it felt a bit weird. My hope is that Arteta is going to now use this time because we've got an intense period. The next few months are going to be really intense where he rotates properly and says, do you know what? This game is a Kieran Tierney game. West Ham home, it's a Kieran Tierney game. Maybe Brighton away is a Kieran Tierney game. Maybe it's a Zinchenko game. But what we want to see is sensible, logical rotation. And my hope is that that's what we're going to get. Maybe, to be fair to Arteta, maybe he and his coaching team knew something about Tierney's fitness pre-World Cup that we didn't. And so maybe we will get that. But that's my hope.
You know, Albert, I'm not on the love train. I've always loved Tierney, but I love Zinchenko and what he brings as well. So where do you stand on this? And you know what's amazing? I even forgot, Chris, about Tomiyasu. I even forgot. As soon as you mentioned him, I lit up and thought, oh, my God, we've still got Tommy as well. Because we have got such great players now for different positions that we've never had before, where we're going, should we have Tierney? Should we have Zinchenko? Should we have Ben White? Should we Tomiyasu? You know, Albert, so are you a Tierney or a Zinchenko sort of man, as they say?
I mean, I love my Scottish braveheart Tierney, man. But listen, we've added Zinchenko to the club. He's a winner, Amanda. He comes with experience, even at 26. They say you can't buy experience. Yes, you can, people. So they bring different qualities. They do. You know, we know Zinchenko can step inside and, you know, for the national team, for Ukraine, he plays in the midfield area. Obviously, his time at City and at Arsenal, he played as a left back, but a bit more than that. So they bring different qualities. Look, Tierney, we've spoken about Amanda before. He has to be managed. Listen, he's high risk in terms of the injury he had in his career, not just at Arsenal. So I wasn't too worried. And actually, competition should be in positions, certain positions at the football club. Nobody should be walking into the team or a guaranteed starter. There should be pressure. So as Eddie mentioned in his interview, it was a great answer, by the way, saying about, you know, the pressure about trying to step in for Jesus. He said, look, it's a pressure. It's pressure regardless of being at Arsenal. Yeah, simple answer, but very, very true. So, yeah, Amanda, I enjoy it both, man. So, listen, bring it on.
So do I. I'm a bit like you. I love both. Where these two over here, over there, are more Tierney.
No. I wouldn't say more Tierney.
Yeah, hold on.
You was on the Tierney love train.
Yeah, but I mean, there are two separate trains here, Amanda.
That's fair enough.
You can interchange on the trains. You know, we've got a season pass here. So, go on.
So everyone in the chat room, who are you, Tierney or Zinchenko? The thing is, it's horrible to even ask that because we love both of them, to be honest. Yes. And they give very different things. But you're right, Chris. You have to play them in the games where we feel, the days of playing Xhaka in the left back or the right back position, thank God. And I love Xhaka, we all do. Let's move along slightly to Gabriel. Decent game, nothing major, was it? I don't think there was anything that anyone else want to talk about, Gabriel?
I think he's going to be one of these players that we need to keep fit all season, because I think as good as Saliba's been, he's also been excellent this season, despite a few rash moments. And it was, at the minute, what I really like about him is he's just kind of delivering consistent 7 out of 10s every single game. That's exactly what we need.
Yeah. Agree, boys. Anything else to add on Gabriel?
I think the keeping him fit thing is interesting. What I think is positive is that we have, even though Arteta talks about we need bodies in January, and we do, defensively, I think we're all right. And if you think about who can play centre-half, we've just had Tomiyasu, who's played for Japan in the World Cup at centre-half. We've got Ben White, who can slot in at centre-half. And then me personally, you've got Gabriel, you've got Saliba, you've got Ben White, you've got Tomiyasu, and you've got Holding in, personally, I'd say, as a fifth choice. And I'm fine with that. And that's the thing that really let us down at the end of last season, because Gabriel went down injured and was basically just playing on fumes, and then we had Holding, who got sent off against Tottenham, and so we were down to bare bones for that Newcastle game away, which is causing us all nightmares. But now, if you've got Gabriel that does come out, you could play Saliba as a left centre half and play White in there. You can play Tomiyasu at the right back. Like, there's options.
That's lovely. And they're good options as well, Chris, aren't they? Yeah. They're not like, oh my God, options. They're good options.
Cedric? We're going to invoke the name of Cedric.
As Cole said, just no room for Cedric in the squad. Ask Chris. You become like famous for this. Infamous.
Yeah.
Right, Saliba. God, who doesn't love William Saliba? Albert?
Yeah, listen, you know, I think even Arteta has spoken about, in terms of the partnership between Gabriel and Saliba, I don't think he probably expected it to gel that quickly, but it's been brilliant, and it has been brilliant. Listen, Antonio's he's a tricky customer most of the time, so they knew there's going to be in for a physical battle. But no, they dealt with, you know what, defensively, we got ourselves into really good positions to cover the centre-backs when they're out of positions, and the full-backs were making the right decisions at the right time. So defensively, I'm very happy and comfortable with this team defensively. I've mentioned that for quite a while now, because we've got a defence who we can look at and actually trust and not look in trepidation who's on the bench or he's playing in the defensive unit. But yeah, no complaints, Amanda, to be honest.
Well, is anyone interested in the fact that Nottingham Forest just scored versus Man United? Is there 2-1? Is anyone interested in a mid-table battle?
Hey.
Not getting too cocky, eh?
Do you know what? Can I just say, I've not been properly looking at the league table. I looked at it about 2 hours ago and realised, this is not United, realised that Liverpool are 15 points off of us. That is, like, my brain, that bamboozles my brain, because that's a five-game swing. Liverpool have to win 5 games and we have to lose 5 games. We're on 15 games already out of 38. That swing is massive. And then when you start to think about, let's bring us back down to earth, because we'd all love for a title challenge. Please, God, let us have a title challenge. But ultimately, at the beginning of the season, I think all four of us would have said, let's have a proper go at top four. We want to get into top four this year.
Yeah.
So for me, top four is what I want. And anything else is a bone. I'm still thinking that until we get to like 25, 26 games, I'm still going to think like that. So then when you see like Liverpool, and we've got a 5-game essentially buffer on them, and they're what, sixth, that really does give me a lot of hope that we're going to do it. Yeah, we're going to do it, certainly for a top four.
Well, I've said all along, because quite a few people are saying to me now, look, you've got to go for it. You know, do you think you can win it? I said, talk to me the night we play City, mid-Feb. If we're still top and we beat them, I'm going to probably start believing that there's a massive chance, not only top four, but the top spot. So we have to wait and see. And as Cole Stark said, and this is what we've said, next 6 games will define our season.
Big game.
Absolutely.
It will. I wanted to actually focus on Ben White, Benny Blanco. Albert, go on. I just absolutely love his calmness, his versatility, and actually his actual confidence. He's like, he don't care. Just doesn't care. It's brilliant. Go on, Albert.
I'm glad you brought me in for Benjamin White. Let me say correctly, Benjamin White. Sorry, Benjamin White. Listen, Amanda, it was very rare for me to stick my neck out of the line for an Arsenal player in recent years, but he's the one player, probably going back last season, his first proper season at Arsenal. Arsenal fans need to remember that. You know, he's not part of a systemic problem defensively at Arsenal. People need to remember that. He's been excellent. He's the last 3 Premier League seasons he's been here. He's been in the Premier League. He's had to play different positions. Amanda, right side of a 3, centre-back at Arsenal. Now he's playing a right-back. I saw a stat. This is obviously before the World Cup, that because apparently he can't head the ball, Amanda. 57% aerial duels won, on par with Gabriel, our centre-back, and Ruben Diaz. What more proof do you need? Offensively offers us something. He's a fantastic passer of the ball. He's got a good relationship with Bukayo Saka. Defensively on the cover, brilliant yesterday. And that's not the first time. I could wax lyrical about this guy, but listen, he's been a fantastic addition. For some of the sections of our fan base, Amanda, like just a key word section, who weren't on board when we bought him, what is it that you didn't see? And it's not, Amanda, before I finish up, it's not to say that I told people. I see this guy play at Leeds. I've seen him play at Brighton. I've seen him develop. I see what he has to offer. Liverpool were interested in him probably 18 months ago now, 12 months ago, whatever it was. He's been excellent. And it's what I've seen with my own set of 2 eyes, and that's how you should judge him. And he's been excellent.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely love him. Let's move on. Xhaka and Partey, James. Chris, go on.
Just a minute on Ben White. Isn't Ben White the sort of person? He's so laid back. He's like horizontal. He's the sort of one that when you were like 8, when you were like 17, and you're trying to get into a nightclub, you'd have like one person go in first on behalf of you, like as a collective, because you just know he'd be totally fine. And Ben White's the sort of lad that'd be like, that's all right, lads, I'll go in. And so Ben White goes in first and just goes to the bouncer, and you all look like you're about 12, but Ben White just goes and goes, all right. And then the bouncer goes, oh, look, he's so cool. He's clearly 18. And so you all just, the bouncer, and Ben White goes, yeah, me and my mates just coming in. Is that all right? And all the bouncers would be like, yeah, in you go, lads. And you'd get in and you'd all be like, come on, get in. Love it. We're underage drinking in a nightclub. And Ben White would be like, yeah, it's fine. That's the sort of bloke he is. I love him.
It's what Melissa said. Love Ben White. So calm. Just goes about his business. Doesn't get flustered. Exactly that. Me and you, Melissa, are on the same page tonight. James, let's talk. Yeah, so I just wanted to bring John Rowe in. The back four are lucky that Partey and Xhaka are both strong in midfield. Reminds me of Vieira and Gilberto. That's what I was thinking before I actually saw John's comment. And welcome to the show, John. What do you think, James? Do you understand that? Do you get that? Do you agree or do you disagree?
Just feel comfortable with them, don't you? I think at the minute, with those three, if you include Ødegaard as well, you just feel so secure. And I'd go as far as saying that Xhaka, Partey, Ødegaard's bold statement, but I think it's the best midfield in the league at the minute. They all just work so well. They're also good at doing their roles. Where Xhaka doesn't have that defensive responsibility anymore, I feel like it's entirely opened up a different side to his game, as we spoke about many a time this season. And Partey just does what Partey does. Like, he's just world-class. And he's one of, I think, a few world-class players we've got at this club at the minute. Not to sound too out there, but you look at these players and, you know, Ben White's another one that you've just spoken about. But God, I didn't get to speak about him as well. But I love that little analogy you had there, Chris, because it's just watching him yesterday. He feels so nonchalant. It's the best way I can describe it. You just watch him and he's just as cool as a cucumber. He's almost got a touch of arrogance in his game, which hopefully you know, won't become too much of a fixture, but he's absolute class. And I'm going off on a tangent myself here, but going back to your question, Amanda, I mean, Xhaka and Partey, you just feel so at ease with them. And when you think the midfield has been a problem for us in the past, you know, we've had the likes of Coughlin in there and, been quite, you know, we've always been that big defensive midfielder away. Well, we've got probably the best defensive midfielder in, at least in the Premier League at the minute, I would say. And you can't ask for much else.
Well, it's interesting what Marcelo Ferreira said, and welcome to the show. Ben White is Arsenal's James Dean. Just going back to that, and if you know who James Dean is, James, or are you too young to know who James Dean is? No.
Oh, my God.
I know. Don't you start. I'm older than all of you by miles. James Dean was a very suave American actor back in the 50s. Like the Fonz from Happy Days? That sort of, like, and you know what? I was thinking this, and Eric Cantona, but he's not as bad as Eric Cantona. He's quiet, Ben, just gets on with the job. He doesn't care. He just gets on with the job. He strolled through that midfield last night at one point. I just laughed. And I'm with you, Albert. I don't praise players when they come to us and I don't criticise them. You have to wait and see. These idiots on social media, they just lose their rag. I mean, if we do get this Mudryk next month, I don't know. There's rumours. I don't know anything about him, but I'm going to welcome him with opening arms because he's going to be an Arsenal player. So it's a lesson for everybody. Anyway, moving on. Sorry. Right. Xhaka and Partey, anyone else got anything to say? I mean, I'm totally happy with them. And I agree with you, James. They are the best midfield in the league. Well, we are top of the league. So it's not unfair to say that.
No. Do you know we have domination? So the thing about yesterday's first half is that made me comfortable is that in our defensive third and in the midfield third, we basically bossed the entire game and looked comfortable. And we've controlled the midfield third of essentially every single game this season, if I think back to it. And that's because of those experienced players that we've got. We all talk about the young team that we've got, but it's because of that mature and experienced midfield of Xhaka and Partey that we are able to do that. So I don't think we can underestimate the impact that they've played and the impact as well. Let's give some flowers to Xhaka as well, because the impact that he's had in changing his position. And, you know, we've heard Arteta talking about he came back from the new season, having essentially been told by Arteta, if you don't change or if you don't adapt your position, then we're going to have to find someone else. And he stepped up to it. Shows a massive amount of character. What a player and what a human being to be able to say, do you know what? I'm going to go through the challenges that I've had at Arsenal and I'm even going to adapt my position now. I'm going to change my mentality even more than it's been so that it can be for the benefit of the team. And we are all benefiting from it. The Arsenal players are benefiting from it. And us as fans are benefiting from it because we are seeing a fantastic Arsenal team right now.
Absolutely. And Uncle Melvin Marks, welcome to the show. If Ben White is Mr. Cool, what is party then, Albert? You're on mute. You're on mute. Unmute.
Mr. Metronome.
Is it? No, I'll have to think. I'll have to think of that one, Mills. I'll have to think. I have to come up with one if I can do it.
Mr. Metronome.
Is that what you're going to do? Mr. Who?
Mr. Metronome. He's Mr. That? Ticking over. He is Mr. Control the pace of a game. Be able to switch the way in which we play football. Like, Partey is a line breaker as well. He's he's Mr. Quarterback.
Okay. Well, the thing is, the next person is Ødegaard. Right. I'm just going to have a little piece on him, and then the rest of you can wax lyrical, because last night must have been one of the best games I've seen him play. And that nutmeg through Paqueta, however you say his name, so I'm in the East End up, and it was just like diagonal down to me, and I went, did I just see what I thought I just saw? It was absolutely amazing. He is incredible. He is our maestro. Did he cost 30 million? Is that right? Or was it 50 million?
35 million.
35 million.
Yeah.
What an absolute steal that man is. I mean, look, generally we love him anyway, but last night he was man of the match by far and incredible. So I'm going to go with you, Albert, first. Talk to me about Ødegaard.
Yeah, listen, it's interesting, Amanda, with him. He's quite a topic of conversation with some Arsenal fans, depending on where you sit with him, with certain people. But we're not going to get into that on here. But listen, he's obviously he's got undoubted talent. He sees a pass, someone that's got that ability to see a pass before he even hits the pass. Someone in the first half, especially yesterday, some of the reverse passes he was hitting was incredible. Like I said, I'm going to be short because I'm going to let the other guys come in. For me, the only thing for me, he could have scored a couple yesterday, to be honest. He got himself into really, really good positions in the final third. Yes, he prefers to pass and he's the playmaker, and I understand that, but I want him to take the responsibility, saying, no, I'm the main man. I'll take the wrath of the teammates, but I'm the captain. Let me lead. I'm going to take a shot from 15, 20, 18 yards, whatever it may be. That's the only slight criticism, but listen. And also as well, I wanted to do it away from home as well. Yes, brilliant when you're with the Emirates. Atmosphere is rocking. You're fantastic at the home games, but I want to see you do it away from home, because that's one of the things that people labelled as sort of Ozil when he was here. Yeah, at the Emirates, fantastic. Away from home, not so great. Maybe seen as a passenger even sometimes, but that's the only thing for me, Amanda.
Okay, Chris?
Well, I love Martin Ødegaard. I think my affection has been well documented on this here channel. But so the thing I love about Martin Ødegaard is that everything that we do flows, like, creatively flows through him.
Yeah.
Like last season, or the season that we had him on loan, and then last season, he drifted to the right, and the connection between him and Saka was obvious. We'd all talked about it. But actually, the connection that he now makes with other players as well, because of the control that he has and the way that he sets the tone of our play in the final third, is just amazing. Like Albert said it a minute, those reverse passes, but the amount of time, like we've all seen, the amount of time he picks the ball up in the sort of half space between midfield and attack, and then looks up and then just does that little sort of chipped ball to the left to Tierney or Zinchenko, whoever it is, just to set us up to play the ball out wide. So not only has he got that connection with Saka, but he also is now, he's varying it so that he's moving it out wide on the other side as well. So he sets the tempo for us. He's our connector. He was popping balls into Eddie multiple times, and it just, he also drops deep. So there's a few times where you see him drop deep into a little pocket so that Ben White can just feed the ball to him. Like, quite often Partey gets that, but occasionally when Partey picks up the ball, Ødegaard is within 10 yards of him, 15 yards of him, to then receive it and then look as the progressive stuff. And I think that's the amazing thing that we're just loving about our team at the moment, is you've got Partey who can be a line breaker. So that's one thing. That's one sort of attacking move we've got in our team. But Partey can also just pop the ball to Ødegaard, who can then travel with it, look to play that sort of that chipped curved ball out wide to the left, fullback, whoever we've got, Sinchenko, whatever it is, or he can interchange with Saka. There's so much variation in our game, and Ødegaard gives us that. And I don't know. I mean, I could probably do 1 hour on this podcast channel, just me talking to myself about Martin Ødegaard, but that would be very boring for everybody else except me. So I'm going to stop talking.
So do you agree with Albert, James, that he's not as good away from the Emirates as he is at the Emirates?
Not sure I can entirely agree with that, mate. I think there are certain games where he may be a little bit more on the periphery, but I think you've also got to kind of accept when you go away from home, you're not going to have the rub of the green in terms of having the ball as often as you might like. Obviously, last night we had close to 70% possession, so he's allowed to do what he wants to do with the ball effectively. And you look at the West Ham, the way West Ham played, particularly in that last 20 minutes, it felt like they gave up. So he was allowed to do whatever he wanted to do with that football. And he did it very, very brilliantly. And I've got no doubts that if we play, he starts against Brighton, which you would assume he does, then I think we'll hopefully see a replica of that performance. Because if he's able to do that on a consistent basis, he will be, no question marks about it, a world-class player come the end of this season, if he's not already one. But I think, like you say, you make a good point that it's about him doing it consistently, which has been an area of his game that he certainly wasn't doing last season. But now I really think this season, I mean, you can't really argue with 10 goal contributions in the Premier League. I mean, that is elite. That's really, really good in 14 games that he's played, or 15. So I couldn't be happier with Martin Ødegaard. Captain's performance. It feels like we've got a good captain for the first time in a long time. A young captain too. Presses at the right times. Presses really well. Great work rate. Great tenacity. And yeah, I think you're right in saying, Albert, about the shooting thing. I noticed that towards the end of the game, when he noticed that West Ham were backing off a little bit, he started to take more opportunities to shoot when the pressure was off and the game was effectively won. He should be doing that when it's 0-0 or, you know, we're a goal behind or whatever, because he's got the talent to do it. We all know he's got the talent to do it. He scored 6 goals in the Premier League this season and they've all been fairly good goals. So he's got to do it more often because he has it in his locker. And apart from that, I mean, it would be wrong to criticise any further, because last night, you know, it's as close to a 10 out of 10 performances you're going to get.
Mm. Also, I would fight you.
I would fight you as well.
I'll fight myself.
You, we're all going to fight each other over Ødegaard. But coming close to Ødegaard, who I thought was an amazing, as we always say every week, is Bukayo Saka. Christopher, Bukayo Saka is getting better and better and better.
Do you know what's for me? I almost feel a bit guilty for what I'm about to say, but because he's so good and impacts games so much, I almost take it for granted. Like, again, I wrote a piece this morning and I talked about how great we were. I basically gave Saka a sentence or two, and it's almost like, yep, Bukayo Saka played well, scored. He's one of our star players.
So reliable.
That's it. Because that is it. He is absolutely amazing. I do wonder how Arteta is going to manage him in terms of, we don't want basically him to break down like a Wilshere because he started at such a young age. And by the time he gets to 22, 23, he's played so much football that his body starts to collapse in on itself. But maybe I'm just getting a little bit too worried for no reason, because he seems robust because he gets absolutely kicked and booted everywhere and he gets up each time. But maybe that's the reason why we're looking at this Mudryk, because maybe we are looking at rotating the left and right wide players. Mm. Again, Mudryk is almost, I think almost exclusively for Shakhtar, he's played as a left winger. But I wonder if Arteta's thinking, look, you can play as a left...
Chris, we'll continue.
That is my drunken dad literally saying he's going to. I'm going to mute myself.
I'm going to mute.
No, oh, bless him, he's embarrassed.
Chris, you've had a power cut.
For those on audio, Chris's dad just walked in and told Chris something, because Chris is not at home tonight. Albert, Saka.
Well, where do I start? What's it? Double figures for goal contributions already this season? That's And he's only just getting started, Amanda. Listen, Mr. Consistent.
He's 21.
Yeah, with him, and I think this is probably more aimed at rival fans. They know he's good, but I don't think they realise he was this good.
Yeah.
Scarra Southgate sees something. Arteta obviously is coming to the club at a time when he kind of broke into the team kind of thing. Emery gave him his chance, but Saka's just Mr. Consistent. I still think he can be better in terms of finishing. I still think he can be better. He's getting better. But yeah, he was in the second half, especially. Yes, I thought he was excellent. He was really, really was. He gave Cresswell untold problems. He gives most fullbacks untold problems. And he's done really, really well, more so because at the start of the season, people were like, I'm in an R and they wasn't sure about the form. And I said, but if you actually watch the games he's played in for Arsenal, every single time you see him get the ball, he's doubled up on.
Yeah.
Early part of the season, he didn't even get a breather. But when you've got intellectual, intelligent players around him like Zinchenko and the likes of Erdegaard, who he's got a fantastic relationship with. He's got a good developing a great relationship with Ben White as well. There's just more to come, Amanda. Listen, like I said, the thing with him was to add more goals because obviously he can toast defenders. He's got some decent pace about him. I've never seen them. For a young player, or generally just a player in general, he makes the ball stick. Brilliant, brilliant. In close proximity, very rarely gets knocked off of the ball. And that's an amazing thing for someone that's not, you know, built like massively or physically, but that can develop. But he's excellent at keeping the ball, which is key in terms of possession. But listen, onwards and upwards for him. He's been amazing and he'll continue to be amazing.
Do you know, it's interesting you said about rival fans, because I've, as you all know, I always say this, I've got a lot of City friends. And one of my City friends said he's no Phil Foden. And I used to argue with him about a season ago and say, listen, what I'm watching, if he just gets better and better, it's just going to be way better than Phil Foden. We always argued. And I think in the World Cup, if you noticed on social media, all England fans were going mad about how much Saka was being kicked and kicked and kicked. And so many of us went, welcome to being an Arsenal fan. Welcome to our world. Because exactly. This is what we go through. And exactly. I think a lot of, not foreign fans, sorry, a lot of rival fans were saying, no, he doesn't get kicked like this. I said, well, he does every week. He gets kicked every week. He just keeps getting up. Thank God he does. But we love our Saka. I know you've got to wrap up, Chris. So let's just talk about Martinelli and go to Eddie. And honestly, just feel free to leave whenever you want. So you can go and have a nice
passive aggressive with your father. Dad. That's waiting outside. Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. He will certainly be getting both barrels from me. Let's also, perhaps I should put a little colour on this by saying, father who was born in Stratford, whose entire family are all West Ham fans. So maybe there's a little bit of bitterness there because a certain team picked up 3 points.
Maybe.
7 points clear at the top.
And his son's wearing an Arsenal top. James, talk to me about Martinelli.
I think I'm going to talk very quickly about Saka as well because No, it's all right. What I love about those two right now is we've got two proper wingers, actual proper wingers. Martinelli is the left winger, Saka is a right winger. And when you think back to what we've had on the flanks in the past, when, you know, we've shuffled Ozil out wide, we've had Ramsey playing on the wing, Cazorla playing on the wing, Podolski even. I mean, when you look back and now we've got two players, they are proper out-and-out wingers and they're so good at their jobs. And what I love about the both of them is that they run at the opposition. They will both take players on. And one ex-Arsenal player that I loved at the time and I've still got a soft spot for him now is Theo Walcott. Great at making runs, great at finishing, never took players on. And we've got two excellent wingers that aren't afraid to take opposition on. And it's not just them two. You know, Eddie was doing it last night. Erdegaard does it as well. Jesus does it. And I love that. It's a brave way of playing. And they've got the skill to do it. Both Saka and Martinelli almost always beat their man. So, yeah, I feel like we're truly blessed to have those two players at the club. And, I hope we keep them forever because I've never been so in love with two footballers.
Well said, mate. Well said.
Look at his eyes. They're all googly. Chris wants to talk about Martinelli, then he's really got to go and see his dad. So go on, Chris.
Yeah, my only dad. I'm going to go and remind my dad about the score. yesterday as well. The thing about Martinelli, it's amazing, is that, what was it, 2-3 years ago, I think it was under the Emery reign, we saw him first start and play in the Europa League, and you see potential, and we've seen this over so many years. The likes of Iwobi, they burst onto the scene. They look really, really good. They never quite hit that next level, but Martinelli feels like a player that is ready to hit that next level. And what, again, just to continue the Martinelli love train, you know, James and I have a season pass and multiple love trains. You know, it's a bit like TFL. You can do like multiple, you can do multiple season passes, but the Martinelli love train must continue, because this guy is amazing. He's direct. He's fast. He terrifies teams. He terrifies the best teams in the league. And, you know, Jurgen Klopp's been dribbling over him for the last 2 or 3 years. And that's for a reason, because he's magnificent. He's a magnificent footballer. And when you've got somebody that terrifies defences on the left and terrifies defences on the right, then it causes issues, because teams think, we can't overload on one side or the other side. We can't double down. Like 3 years ago or 2 years ago, people talked about Arsenal. Like when Arteta first joined us as a manager, we were talking about how everything goes down the left-hand side, or the Emery, you know, Kolasinac or whatever it was. It all happened down the left-hand side with cutbacks. We've got so many options now, and that's because Martinelli is just as fantastic as Saka. And yeah. I can't speak highly enough about them.
Right, 17 Chris. Goal contributions, man. So
honestly,
fun.
Yeah, amazing.
You're
yeah.
so funny. Head off. Thank you so
love
much.
Love you guys all.
We love you. This. Thank you, Chris. We'll see you later, next mate. Show. Love Take me. Care. Merry Christmas. There we go.
And there were two.
I hope you can't hear my echo back, because I can hear myself again. Mm. Hopefully not. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Let me try something else.
I can hear you fine. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, I can just hear myself. I hope this, because it's not going to be good on audio. But anyway, you two, let's now move on to Eddie.
Yes.
And Albert. Look, I had Alan Algar on the show, and I'm going to name and shame him. He's not impressed with it. I said, we've got to give him a chance. Albert, you continue. Go on.
Yeah, I did a review on my channel this morning of the game yesterday, and but I clipped a particular piece that's about Eddie. You know what it is, Amanda? Yeah, listen, I've seen many opinions about him, right? Negative, ultra negative, and negative. To me, there's two sorts of ways you can look at it. Even I look at it from my own personal point of view. Is he going to be the main man going forward? Who knows? Arteta loves him. Arteta sees something in him that he's obviously kept him here. So he's going to be here for a fair few seasons, and people need to get over it, right? But I think for me, Amanda, not just yesterday's performance. I'll talk about that quickly, actually. Yeah, so I thought we did well yesterday. Now, I'm glad he got the goal. And there are a couple moments in the first half where decision-making-wise, and I think Thierry Henry spoke about that, particularly with a couple of situations he got himself into and not getting shots off. Great goal, by the way. Great team goal, but great finish. You've got to put the ball in, and he did that. But just to finish up before I sort of go to Cookie, the thing is, man, we had the break with the World Cup, right? And no Arsenal games, no Premier League. The guy's still getting pelters. There's no football, right? Just a World Cup. He's still getting pelters. So it's like, well, we come back after a 6-week break. Arsenal play well, win the game convincingly, scoring goals. Eddie gets on the score sheet. And yet, I saw a little bit of Amanda the timeline. I don't know if you saw it or not, James, or whatever, but people still sort of are like, you know, I'm not sure if he's good enough. And I'm like, there's a time and a place for everything. I don't think the time to talk about how good he is, inverted commas, is after we win 3-1 at home to West Ham and he scored. Yeah. I don't understand that. I mean, if Arsenal fans want to explain that to me, in that sense, in an isolated game, Amanda, give the kid a break. Like, what do you want him to do? He scored. He impacted the game. You know, he's a certain type of striker. Listen, get over it. But I just think, look, give the guy a break. Look, he might not be your cup of tea as an Arsenal fan, but he's here. He's one of our players. He's not going anywhere anytime soon. He's got a big role to fill in the next what, till end of February, possibly, Amanda, depending on how quickly Jesus comes back and if Arsenal are going to buy a striker. I don't think they will, but that's another subject. But listen, just give the kid a break, man. For what I saw in the socials yesterday, I'm like, you know, we won. We played well.
And
like,
also... Cool.
Yeah, go on.
I hope my microphone isn't too bad, but also, we've got to support him. He's going to be playing for us for weeks on end until Jesus is back. And he's not that bad, but he's just got, it's just going to take a bit of time. Remember, he comes in, he comes out, he doesn't have that consistency. He's going to have it now. And he scored in his first game. So, hello. Let's just, you know, people on social media really need to understand that some of these players do actually read these comments, as we know. He's a young boy. And I feel he feels he's not wanted. Do you know what I mean, James? Or am I being a bit too mothery about this?
I don't know. I don't think Eddie should feel like he's unwanted. I think that would be very harsh on himself, because I noticed particularly, like, I thought support for him was good in the ground yesterday. Everyone was raucous after he scored, chanting his name. Big cheer for him when the lineups were announced at the start. I think those in the ground, I think that's all he needs to focus on, what happens in the ground. Everything else is just nonsense. He shouldn't pay any attention to that, because some of the stuff I was listening to, reading about Nketiah in the build-up to this game, I was like, hang on, are we talking about the same player that was so... You know, I'm not going to say world class at the end of last season, but a guy that scored against the likes of Manchester United was really quite pivotal in that dramatic turnaround we had towards the end of last season. Okay, we didn't get finished where we wanted to, but, you know, if he hadn't come in for Lacazette, we certainly could have finished a lot lower than where we did. So I think he was excellent in the period that he played us in, given that he was coming in cold. He has played football this season, and okay, he has been underwhelming at times, but you've got to remember that he's coming into the B team every time he's played. He's not coming into the starting Premier League team. He's coming into a team that's had the likes of Cedric, Holding, you know, not to disrespect Fabio Vieira, but you're coming into a completely different group of players. Whereas in the Premier League, you're coming into the settled 11. Everything is the same. You're now the spearhead of the team, apart from Jesus. I thought we saw a player that slotted in perfectly. I don't think our performance was impacted any way at all. He's a completely different player to Jesus, but in a good way. And I think he's got elements of his game that Jesus doesn't possess that I think makes us better. I think he's better at running in behind. Jesus drops very deep, whereas Eddie tends to stay in the final third of the pitch more often. He waits for things to happen, whereas Jesus, I feel, tries to make things happen. Mm. And both of those types of players, you know, have their benefits and their hindrances. But he took his goal brilliantly, pinned the defender, physically very strong in the top half of his body. Excellent finish. You know, given Jesus's goal-scoring form, would he have scored that? I don't know. But I think what you would say about Eddie is that if he was playing for any mid-table team in the Premier League as their first-choice striker, I'd have a comfortable amount of money on him scoring at least 15 goals a season. And if he got to that point, then you'd have big clubs sniffing around him. And you've got to remember as well, reality check for a moment, this is our second choice striker. You can't have a world-class player waiting in the wings. It doesn't happen. Because if they're world-class, they'll be playing week in, week out for a world-class team. There are only a handful of teams that can have that luxury. Real Madrid, Barcelona, etc. I mean, you know, look at Bayern Munich. They've got Choupo-Moting starting as their striker. And even Manchester City, their B striker is Alvarez, who, okay, is a World Cup winner, but coming into the team when they signed him, the drop-off from Haaland to him is pretty significant. So you just can't have a world-class player waiting in the wings. And Eddie, for what we need as a club at this moment in time, a player that's going to work hard, is going to score goals, and, you know, he's just an all-round good player to have. In my opinion, as a second-choice striker, I've only got good things to say about him, and hopefully he picks up where he left off, because last night I thought he was excellent.
I think we need to support him. Absolutely. He needs it, and he's only going to get better with that support. And he's not that bad a player. He really isn't, and he's just got to give him time.
Just some of the stuff I was seeing, even during the World Cup, I was like, we realise the Premier League season's on a break, right? Like, you can't affect any games. Arsenal are not playing. And then yesterday we had the game. Obviously, Cookie, you saw it differently because he's at the game. But I'm from the social media stuff I was seeing, I'm like, if you just watch the game I've been watching, like, he scored a good goal as well. It wasn't like a scrappy goal. It's a really good team goal. And, like, what Arsenal fans, what do you want? What do you want from him in that particular game? he's contributed to the team winning Absolutely. The game. Three points. I don't get. Yeah, go on, Amanda. Sorry, come here.
No. I agree with you, but I do miss Jesus in the team. It's a real hard one because I just love what he brings, the tenacity. And as Cookie says, he makes things happen. But would he have scored that? He hasn't scored for a while, which for me isn't a problem. But we do, you know, Eddie's there to score goals. Anyway, look, we've been done an hour and 15 minutes already. I need to get a couple of things out. So Brighton, I've just asked Chris what his prediction for Brighton is. He's going 1-1, which I'm surprised at. Cookie, Brighton, and I'm writing these down so I remember.
I'd be disappointed if we didn't win it. And it is going to be a really tough game, but they've not got Caicedo. Caicedo, how you say it? Probably butchered that, but he's out through suspension. I don't think McAllister's going to be back. This is a good time to be playing Brighton, I think. And they've just, you know, they've not quite got the strength in, not that we've got great strength in depth, but I would feel going away playing against them, if we're able to maintain the levels that we were at yesterday, we should, hopefully, because they'll potentially be a bit more fatigued than we were, we could be. But yeah, I think we should win. I don't think it'll be easy. I'm going to go 1-0.
So you're going 1-0, Albert?
Oh, our record's not fantastic there. I can see why Chris went 1-1, actually. You know what? I'm going to be bold, actually. I'm going to go us to sneak it 2-1.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it'll be very Leedsy.
Good football inside, man. Yeah.
I'm a bit worried about it because I can see them, you know, having a lot of chance in this game, almost dominating it at times. You know, the games are coming thick and fast at the minute. So, yeah, we'll do well to win this game.
Okay, so I'm going 1-0. I haven't done a 1-0 yet this season. Ooh. I just think it's going to be, like you all say, a bit tough, but I do think we'll win it. Also, someone's just mentioned that Saliba is one yellow short of a suspension. Now, do we want him to get a yellow against Newcastle? Then that stops him playing in the Oxford game. Does that count? I don't know where yellows count anymore.
Yeah, it's
hard. They do count. I'm certain they
do. Oxford is the League Cup, yeah? And that is after Newcastle. Oh, FA Cup, sorry. Yeah. So that's after. Yeah, we need him to get a yellow against Newcastle. I'm telling you, we can't do that with Spurs or United, that's for sure.
Man, they're still trying to get a ticket for that Newcastle game.
If anyone's got a spare ticket for Newcastle, please let Albert know.
That's going to be a humdinger, mate, trust me.
Azat B is going 2-1 to the Arsenal. Right, couple of other bits. I'm going to be back on New Year's Day. Not sure what time, probably in the afternoon sometime. I might do it when you've all woken up from all your parties and all your drinking. And I'm going to be discussing Brighton. I don't know who's on the show yet. It depends who's free and willing on New Year's Day, but I'm not going post game on New Year's Eve. Also, I would like to say that during the World Cup, for those that don't know, I did 7 shows called What Arsenal Mean to Me, and I really want to thank the guests. So the first one up was Jordan Jarrett Bryan, who's on TalkSport. Brilliant guest.
Yeah, he is. He's brilliant.
He's lovely. Second guest was Stuart McFarlane. Third time he's been on the show. Absolutely lovely. It's a fantastic experience to listen to him because he's so close to everyone at the club. Travels with him 24/7. So if you want to watch that one. Then we had our Danny from the Burkamp Wonderland and Melvin from the Over and Over and Over Again podcast. Then really interesting chat. Tom from the Gooner Talk came on, Tom Canton, our mates. It was fantastic to have me one-on-one with Tom. Then I had Akil Vyas and Tim Payton from the AST, and I could have spoken to them for about 3 hours. And it was brilliant. And Tim was also at the World Cup, so we were discussing that as well. The penultimate was Dave Hillier, who used to play for us in the 80s, and I love Dave. Yeah, it's a great show. And the last one was my dad and my cousin, and we went back to all our games at Highbury and all our life together. So if any of you want to watch or listen, they're all up on the Same Old Arsenal. I just want to say thank you to all of those people that came on. It's just, I wanted to keep Arsenal alive during the World Cup, and it was brilliant. I loved them all. So if you want to go and listen, for those that constantly are here week after week, thank you so much. I want to wish you a happy new year. I'm going to be back on New Year's Day. Are we going to win at Brighton? I don't know. Let's hope so. I've gone for 1-0. Albert's 2-1. Cookie's 1-0. Chris has gone for a draw. Listen, have a great week. As I said, I still don't know what day it is. Enjoy your festivities, your mince pies, your sausage rolls, whatever you're drinking. Enjoy. For me, that's it. Also, I'd like to thank Albert and Cookie. Cookie, tell everyone where they can find you.
Go on, Cookie.
You can find me, well, it depends on New Year's, probably hanging out the back of a skip somewhere. No, you can find me on Twitter at JECook96. Thank you for having me on as always, Amanda.
Ah, you're welcome. Thank you, Carl Stark, for the 7 shows. Thank you, Hachi. And that's lovely, Marcello. Thank you. Now, Albert, where can everyone find you? Because you're so brilliant. I just love your podcast as well.
I try, Amanda. Thank you for having me on again. Yeah, Albert JTV, people. I will be back from Brighton. I probably will do a post-game after this just to get it out of the way. But, yeah, that's where you can find me. Albert JTV and Twitter handle is right next to my name as well. So easy to find, people. Come and subscribe and follow.
Oh, and thank you, Robert. That is brilliant. If anyone's got a ticket for Newcastle, please, please, or retweet Albert's like chase for a ticket because he'd love to go. James and I will be there. Hopefully, Albert will be. Happy New Year, everyone. We're top of the league. We can enjoy it. We can look down on everyone and go, the Arsenal. Good night, everyone. Always Arsenal. Social Podcast Network.